is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Jay from Sub 70. It's Wednesday, March 14th. The Arnold Palmer Invitational starts tomorrow at Bay Hill. Last week at the Valspar was the triumphant sort of, although he didn't win, but return of Tiger Woods. He ended up finishing tied for second with Patrick Reed. I mean, obviously from the ratings, which were the highest for any non-major in the last 5 years, show that the Tiger factor is back, is in full effect. And the one nice thing is that it looks like Tiger, his game looks pretty effortless. He's hitting the ball out of thick rough. He's shaping it both directions. His distances seem dialed in. It's pretty remarkable. His short game's amazing. And the last time he attempted one of these comebacks, he was, shanking chip shots and all that other stuff. So, really exciting. I think he's the betting favorite for this weekend's tournament, which is ridiculous, but that's the Tiger effect. And I know we're all, everybody's excited to watch him play and get back on tour and competing. So congratulations to Paul Casey on his win, which kind of got overshadowed by the whole Tiger thing. But I guess that's what happens when Tiger's in contention. The interview on this episode of the podcast is with Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño, affectionately known as Gonzo. Gonzo has won 7 times on the European Tour. He grew up in the same sort of time period in Spain with Sergio. We talked a lot about him trying to improve his game, his time on both the Web.com Tour and the European Tour, and his efforts to get back onto the PGA Tour, his relocation and some of that stuff, moving from Spain to Florida. Talked about the differences between the European Tour, the Web Tour, and the PGA Tour, just as far as camaraderie with the guys and just sort of getting from tour event to tour event. And actually, I just happened to talk a little bit about a shot that Tiger Woods hit at Bay Hill, which has stuck with him over the years. So it's a really great interview. We appreciate the time, Gonzo, and hopefully, he'll get his card back and be out there competing on the PGA Tour soon. If you have any questions or feedback, hit us up on social media at GolfSub70. Here's the interview.
Well, I would like to welcome to the podcast 7-time European Tour winner Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño to the podcast. Gonzo, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Hello. So it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, great playing in your last event on the European Tour at the Qatar Masters, T4, 15 under par. What's been the key to the solid play of late?
Well, I made some swing changes in the preseason, and they were definitely paying off. Not only because of this fourth finish in Qatar, but only I made a couple of top tens in the web.com tour this year. So far, it's been a very consistent and solid season, especially the way I hit the ball. I mean, there's always things to improve. There's no question about that. But I mean, it's been a fantastic start of the year, as I said.
Yeah, I read somewhere that you, and I'm sort of paraphrasing here, but you really have a full understanding of your golf swing and why it works and what doesn't work, why it doesn't work. And what sort of light bulb came on, or how did you get to that point where you really feel like you're in control of it at this point?
Well, end of last year, I think it was after tour school, web.com tour school, I went to Del Mar, California to see Greg Rose. And he gave me some very good tips and a very good understanding on how the hips move through impact. Believe it or not, I mean, I think I had the whole concept all wrong. And the way he explained it to me, especially how the right hip moves, it made a lot of sense. And for some reason, I think I was just doing it wrong for the last 30 years. So it's never too late to get it right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we're all still trying to get better and better, right? It's a never-ending conquest to try to improve at the game. And as even you playing at the highest level, you're still learning to these days. It's pretty amazing.
It is. I mean, you're always trying to improve. There's no question about it. I mean, you've seen it even in guys that they were number one in the world, Tiger Woods, Luke Donald, Martin Kaymer. I mean, they get to number one and they want to keep improving. And sometimes, unfortunately, the things don't go the way you plan or the way you were expecting to. I mean, it's one of those, it's always the big question. It's what do you work at? Do you work at making your strengths even stronger, or do you want to work at improving your weaknesses? It's a very difficult question to ask. Some people would say that you have to make your strengths stronger, but I don't know. I think if you want to be a better player, there's no question you have to work every part of your game and try to make it as strong and as consistent as you can possibly do can.
Well, also with your schedule this year, you're basically playing almost three tours. You're exempt on the European Tour, the Web.com Tour, and I'm assuming you'll get in some PGA Tour events as well. Is there one tour that you're mainly focusing on, or are you just going to kind of look at the best opportunity as your schedule allows of where you're going to play?
No, I'm definitely want to focus a little bit more on the web. That's my goal for the year, focusing on the web, trying to get that tour card back. And, of course, the good thing about the web is it's only 25 tournaments, and that gives you, and there's some good breaks in between tournaments, so that gives you opportunities to go play Europe, like I did these last few weeks when I went to the Middle East. So, yeah, my goal would be probably focus on the web, try and get the job done as soon as I can, and once I've got that car secured, then I'll try and go Europe and play a little bit more over there.
When you first started playing golf in Spain, who introduced you to the game, and at what age did you start to show some real talent for it?
Well, it was my dad. My dad was an amateur golfer, and he introduced me to a lot of sports, but for some reason, golf always kept my attention. I think I was 2 years old or 3 years old when I started, and as I said, it always, I don't know, there was something about it that always kept me attracted. When do I start showing some talent? I don't know. It's a very good question. I mean, I'm from the very same generation as Sergio Garcia. So I mean, I was always under his shadow. I mean, that was talent. Mine was something different. So no, I wasn't really. To be honest with you, I mean, even though I was playing on the national team at the time in Spain and all that, I didn't really think seriously about turning professional. I think it wasn't until my second year in college, something like that. Then is when I decided, well, maybe I have to give it a go, give it a try. I can always go back to do whatever. So I think I made the right choice, because I don't see myself working in an office right now.
When you won the Spanish amateur championship, was that sort of a turning point too, that you knew you had the game to probably take it to the next level as well?
No, not really. Believe it or not, I think it wasn't until I started playing professional events as an amateur. I remember I played a couple of European Tour events. I played the Argentinian Open as an amateur, and I had a couple of good finishes. And then is when I decided maybe I can make a living out of this. But it wasn't until then. I think winning amateur tournaments, it's a totally different animal to playing professional golf. And you know, I've seen so many good Spanish amateurs that then tried it on the professional rankings and never made it, that kind of always put me off. So, yeah, it took me a while. I mean, it was always my dream, don't get me wrong, but it was always my dream to become a professional golfer. But I wasn't really sure about it until probably I was 21 or 22, because I turned professional pretty late. I turned professional when I was 24 years old, which is quite late, especially when you compare it to all these new generations when they turn professional when they're 18 or 19 years old.
Well, when you turned pro in 2004, you got your European Tour card fairly quick. How was the experience of going through Q School, and what was that whole transition like?
Well, I did. I think I was very lucky that I got it on my first attempt. Funny enough, I remember first stage, I made it through pretty easily. At the time, all the players used to go to, as well, you know, there's different places where you can play first stage. And I remember all the Spanish players used to go to the one in France, which was the one nearby. But I always thought that that was going to be the hardest because you had all the Spanish and French players over there. So instead of going there, I went to St. Anne's or Lynx near Lyon. And as I said, I made it through pretty easy, which, I mean, helped my confidence. Well, I remember them played second stage in Spain. And I made it through in a playoff. It was like a 10-man playoff or 8-man playoff. I can't really remember. And I got the very last spot on the fifth playoff hole. So, and then I went on the next week to get my cards. I finished, I think, 8. I remember playing with Molinari, Francesco on the last couple of rounds. But I always think that what would have happened to my career if I hadn't made it through that playoff on second stage. Maybe I wouldn't be here talking to you right now.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you get out on tour, your first season, you have 2 wins, you know, the KLM and the BMW. So getting through those stages of Q School and winning twice in a pretty quick period, that had to really do a lot for your confidence that you knew you could win at the highest level.
Yeah, especially winning the second time. I mean, winning once, you know, you can always have kind of your lucky week or something. But winning for the second time, that for me was a confirmation that I could definitely do something important in professional golf. And well, that was probably the turning point. I mean, winning, it's always important, but as I said, you can always get that lucky week. But winning the second time, especially the way I did, I think it was against Henrik Stenson in a playoff, that was pretty special.
And then really consistent play all the way through 2013 on the European Tour. Would you consider your biggest win the BMW Masters with the strength of that field and of the 7 European Tour wins that you have?
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember that was the first event when they started those final series on the European Tour. And as you said, the strength of the field that week was very important. But for me, if you had to ask me for one win, I think if I had to pick one, I would choose probably the British Masters at the Belfry. Where I beat Westwood in a 4-hole playoff. I mean, I think I've always said that a friend of mine said to me once that if you want to be a good professional or a good professional golfer should win at least once in the UK and once in America. I've already ticked that box in the UK, and now I wanna make it happen here.
Well, yeah, and then 2014, you move over to the United States to plan the PGA Tour. What prompted that decision to move the family and bring your game over to the States to see what happens over on this tour as well?
Well, I wanted to try over here. I mean, this is the biggest, the most important tour in the world, and of course, after 10 years playing in Europe, I thought it was the right time to do it. And if I want to focus over here, I want to focus do it properly, and that's the reason we decided to move over instead of flying back and forth every time. We thought it would be easier for everybody if I was going to play a full schedule over here to get a base here and settle down here. And well, it's been almost five years now, and we have to say, I mean, we love it here in the U.S. People are really nice. I mean, we love it, and hopefully we'll stay here for a long time.
Yeah, I was going to ask how that transition goes from living in Europe over to the United States and Florida. Is there things that you miss living, or is it, let me rephrase that, is there things about Europe that you miss that you don't get to do anymore that you're in the States, or has that transition been pretty smooth?
Well, there's always, I mean, it's never easy. It's a big change, always moving houses, and especially when you move to a different country, there's always a time for adaptation. And I think even though Miami, as you said, is a very cosmopolitan city, and it's very international, and it's, in a way, it's similar to Spain, but yeah, I mean, it's different, and of course you miss the family, you miss the friends. It takes a little while to adapt, but I think we've done that, and now I've got no excuses now. So it's time to get the finger out and just start playing some decent golf now.
From playing a lot on both tours, you know, you see sort of like a difference of camaraderie from the European Tour. And this, I'm asking this generically of I kind of perceive the European Tour of the guys hanging out a little bit more, a little bit of a smaller platform compared to like the US PGA Tour. But you've played both. What's the biggest difference between both tours, maybe off the golf course, that people might not realize?
Off the golf course, yes, I would say there's a little bit more camaraderie in Europe. There's no question about it. But I'm going to tell you the reason, I think, behind what I believe is the reason. You know, here when you get to the PGA Tour, everybody gets their own car. And they pretty much do whatever they want from there. They can stay wherever they want. Some people bring their families. Some people, I don't know, would stay in a Marriott. Some other would stay in a Hilton. While in Europe, there's always an official hotel for the week. Nobody gets cars. So, I mean, you either stay on the official hotel or the courtesy cars won't drive you to your hotel. I mean, you have to stay on that very same place, everybody. So I think that helps, because then when you go down to the lobby, there's always players having a breakfast or for dinner. There's always going to be there somewhere, someone who can hang out with. So I think that helps for camaraderie, you know what I mean? While here, yeah, people pretty much do their own thing. I mean, that would be one. And I don't know. I mean, I have to say people have been super friendly with me. I made really good friends here in the PGA Tour and the Web.com Tour. And I do feel, for example, that camaraderie you're talking about, I do feel it on the web a little bit more, especially on these first tournaments of the year where you travel abroad and the same thing. You've got only one hotel where everybody's staying, and you've got the bus rides to the golf course, all those things. Those help. I mean, those little things help for that. I mean, getting all the players together, and it helps for that camaraderie, as you said.
I'm also curious, when you moved to Florida, did you end up joining a golf club or a country club down there for you to practice? So I'm curious where you're practicing and playing out of. And then also, if you did join, do you actually keep a handicap at your own club? And what's your handicap if you have to play in a member game?
No. Believe it or not, I never joined a club here. I mean, the people at Norwich Country Club and Scranton at Doral, they're really nice to me, and they let me use their facilities, especially at Norwich. But no, I mean, I haven't joined any clubs, and I don't take the scores for my handicap. So that's something maybe to start to keep in mind and maybe start doing it. But no, when I do, I mean, there's some professional days here in Miami as well. And when we play, we used to play together, so we don't use any handicaps. And when we play with amateurs, they have to really play from the forward tees. We play from the back, and everybody plays pretty much their own ball and do their thing. So I don't know. No, I haven't been. It's something that kind of I lost track once I become professional about handicaps.
I'm always curious of, you know, the scores you guys shoot, what your handicaps would be, +5, +6. It would have to be ridiculously good.
No, I think I'll be without the plus. I'll be 4 or 5. No pluses, yeah, in my case.
Let's talk about Spanish golfers. Obviously, there's been some really good ones and great ones, and there's a really cool lineage with it. How close did you get to be with Seve Ballesteros, and how well did you get to know him?
Well, unfortunately, when I turned professional, Seve wasn't playing competitively anymore. I did get to meet him. He captained me at the Seve Trophy 1 year, and I was fortunate enough to spend some time with him. I've done some exhibitions with him as well, so I did get to meet him, but I never got to see him playing, or I never get to play him when he was playing at his best. Of course, as a kid, I used to follow him all over. I mean, every time he was playing in Madrid, that would be a guy I would go and follow, even though it was pretty difficult to see something, because I mean he was always the one carrying the big crowds. But whatever I know from Seve, I mean, other than the time I spent with him, is through his good friend Olatala, who's always telling stories and about him, and he keeps his memory very, very alive. So it's I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with Oli, I'm fortunate to call him a friend, and as I said, he keeps Seve's spirit very, very much alive.
Well, he was the next great golfer I was going to bring up, is Olafable, and obviously another legend, great competitor and champion. What has your friendship, or what does he, what knowledge and inspiration has he given you as a friend and sort of a mentor?
Well, he's been a mentor to me, no question. He took me under his wing when the same way Seve took him under his wing when he started. Ollie did the very same with all the, not only me, but all the young players on the European tour, all the young Spanish players. And he's always willing to help. That's the thing about Jose Maria. You ask him for some tips, maybe with the chipping or with the putting, and he would stay on the range with you for whatever long it takes until he gets it right. Don't you think he's just going to go there and give you a quick tip just to get away with it? No. If he has to spend 3 hours with you on the range until you get it right, he'll be there. Other than that, well, now I'm living here in the U.S., as you know, and he's back in Spain. So I think last time I saw him was in Naples last year. When he started playing on the Champions Tour, I drove to Naples to see him. Unfortunately, this time I couldn't make it because I think it was in Colombia or Panama playing somewhere. But we still keep in touch. And I don't know, it's what I admire the most about Olazabal is probably his resilience. He's been very, very unfortunate with his injuries. Not so much for the fact of being injured, that it can happen to any athlete, but it's the kind of injuries he had and how difficult it's been to diagnose what was going on. And I mean, it's a shame because I think he would have won many more tournaments if it hadn't been for his health. But as I said, he's something I truly admire because his grit and his resilience is amazing, and he lives and breathes golf. I mean, that's all he does. And I'm sorry to see him struggle. I know he wants to do well on the Champions Tour, even though things aren't going his way. But I'm sure he'll get his game back. I mean, it's a perfect example when things aren't going your way. That's probably the one you have to be looking at because he's a guy that will never give up on the golf course. He's always fighting. He's always competing. He loves to compete. That's probably the key about Jose Maria.
I can tell you, just being a golf fan, I would love to see him playing really well in the Champions Tour. I love his golf swing. I love his demeanor on the course. I hope he gets, you know, back to that elite level as well. It'd be great for him.
Yeah, we all do.
Out there.
We all do. I mean, even though he admitted to me last year when I asked him, I said, well, how is it on the Champions Tour? I mean, is it the same as on the main tour? I said, well, you know, for some reason, I don't have those butterflies on the first tee, but that was at the very beginning of the season. I haven't talked to him in a while, and I'm sure probably when he plays the majors, he still gets those butterflies. But for Ollie, I think it's all about the Masters Week. I mean, well, that's his favorite week of the year, and that's the beauty about having won it twice, that he can go back there every April and enjoy being with the past champions. And as I said, taking probably now John Rahm and all these guys under his wing and just giving him tips about the course. That's where Ollie is. Ollie, it's in Augusta National the very first week of April.
Well, also speaking of Masters champions, Sergio Garcia, I'm assuming you competed a lot against him in your amateur days. He seems also like a really great guy. What's your thoughts on Sergio and playing against him all these years and getting to know him as well?
Well, we did play a lot together as kids. I don't know if we were competing, really competing, because he was winning every tournament by 8 or 9 or 10 shots. So I wouldn't call that competition. But yeah, I grew up. I first met Sergio when we were 9 years old, and we've been playing together pretty much ever since. And well, he's a good friend. He's probably, I've seen a lot of players, and I would say, and that it's probably the most talented player I know. I was delighted, as you can imagine, as I think as we all were, when we saw him winning the first major last year. Hopefully it's the first of many. I mean, he was definitely due, and especially the way he did it with against Justin and the amazing back nine. I mean, that's something we'll never forget. I mean, I was so happy for him, and I didn't realize how people wanted him to win until he held that very last pad. And I saw the reaction of the crowds. And then the following weeks, everywhere I go, everybody was talking about Sergio and how happy they were for him. So, I mean, it's I'm really delighted for him. And hopefully, as I said, is the very first of many majors to come.
Yeah, I totally agree with you that I think golf fans in general were really pulling for him to get that major. Like, it just seemed like he was ready for it. It was his time, and it made sense for him to win that tournament. So I think
funny enough, I never thought it was going to be the Masters. I mean, I would have thought it would have been any of the three majors, but not the Masters. I mean, for some reason, he never liked that course. I mean, he was always complaining. I don't know. I never thought that his first major was going to be the Masters. But I mean, as I said, I'm super happy for him.
Well, it's a pretty good first one to get if you're going to get one of them.
Yes.
It doesn't get much
no question. I don't think there's a wrong one to get. there's no such a thing as a wrong major to win.
Exactly. My other guy I got to ask you about, the legend of legends, Jimenez. There has to be a great mechanics story that you have to have without throwing him under the bus too bad. But, I mean, American golf fans just love that guy. I mean, the mechanic is awesome. So is there any great mechanic stories you can share?
I don't know. I have done so many. I've done so many, actually. I don't know if they sent you this video. I mean, you've probably seen this video. I got it a couple of weeks ago where he's doing this clinic in Italy. And I don't know who decides it was a brilliant idea to hit his driver on the, there was a guy standing right in front of him, and he was supposed to hit his driver right under his legs. And somehow he missed it, and he hit this guy in the ankle.
Oh, Jesus.
No. I mean, I'll tweet that video later, I mean, so you can have it. I mean, it's something else. That video is absolutely something else. I mean, well, that's Miguel. I mean, he's not afraid of anything. I mean, he's probably one of the most aggressive players I've ever seen on a golf course. And the thing about Miguel is, or what I think is the key for his success, it's his self-esteem. I mean, he believes he's not only the best player in the world, but also the best-looking man in the world. And that's key for him. I mean, that's when he's playing, he believes nobody can beat him. I mean, he will go for any flag. It doesn't matter how tall in the corner, or behind a bunker, or beside the water it is, he's going to go for it. And probably that's the key for his success in life. He just lives... He just lives the moment, and he enjoys the moment, and he's a legend, and I understand that people love him because, I mean, there's so much to know about him. I mean, I think we all want to be a little bit like Miguel.
Oh, I totally agree, and I don't think people realize, you know, how good he is. I mean, how many European Tour wins he has, like, how he's kind of a character.
I think he's 21 or 22.
Yeah,
I mean, and funny story is he started winning pretty late on his career. I think his first win he was already 35. I think he's the guy with most wins in his 40s with Vijay, he's the oldest winner in European Tour. I don't know. He's got so many achievements. The only thing I would have loved to see Miguel is winning a major. I mean, that would have been he was close a couple of times. I remember he's been in contention in the Masters a couple of times. He finished second to Tiger when in the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach in 2000 when Tiger won by, I don't know how many he won. So, I mean, that probably would have been the icing on an amazing career. But he's still, I mean, the beauty about Miguel is that he still loves playing golf. He loves playing the Champions Tour, and it makes it fun to watch and different as well. I mean, it's somebody that is not, it's absolutely a different kind of role model for everyone.
Yeah, he's completely enjoyable to watch. I love his game. My next question is, last year when you went to Q School for the European Tour, you had Alvaro Quiroz on the bag. How did that come about, and what did he bring to that Q School, and how did he help you along?
Well, we were having dinner one night in we're playing a tournament there in another round, and he mentioned that his season was pretty much over, that he wasn't going to play any of the final series events, and I think then when he realized he was going to have to stay home for the next 2 months, I think he wanted a way out, right? He asked me if it would be okay for me to have him in the bag the week of the tour school. I said, yeah, of course, why not? And I think it was a great idea. You know, because tour school, especially in Europe, that it's played over six rounds, it's a very, very good exhaustion week. And I think that the fact of having a friend in the bag that is going to, I'm not a friend, but I mean, a player of his caliber, that he knows the way you're thinking or the way you're feeling on the golf course. Overall, I think it was a great week together. He helped me a lot. We had a good time, and we got the goal. I mean, that was getting the car back. We did it. So, I mean, I will forever be grateful with him for that. And as I said, hopefully I don't have to do it. Like, I have to pay him back and have it for him in tour school. I'm something I don't want him. I never want to see him play in tour school. But if I have to pay him back and carry his bag, I'll be more than happy to do it.
Well, let's talk about the majors in golf. You've gotten to play in all of them. Is there one major championship that you enjoy playing in the most? And if so, why do you enjoy it the most?
Well, for me, it has to be the Masters. I don't know. There's something very, very special about that week. I always say the same thing to my friends who have never been to Augusta. I say, wait, you know what they tell you about this movie? Everybody's telling you about this movie and talking about this movie. And then when you go finally to watch it, and you know your expectations were so high that the movie was fine, but I mean you were expecting more. Well, Augusta is the opposite. I mean, everybody's talking about the Masters, and then when you get there and you finally get to see it, it's way better than you expected. So every time I have a friend that he's thinking about going to the Masters, I say, hey, don't even hesitate and do it, because I mean, there's something unique about that place. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a history. I don't know. You can't figure it out, but it's definitely the coolest week of the year. I've been fortunate to play three times, and I can't wait to play it again. I mean, that's my goal. That's the only reason I want to win the PGA Tour, is to play the Masters once again.
Is the pressure different in a major when you're peg it on the first tee on Thursday, or once you go through your routine, does it feel like another PGA Tour event because you've done that so many times? Or is there a difference still even at the professional level of, wow,
there is a little difference on the first tee, especially the first time. I remember my first major was the British Open in 2006 at Holbeck, where Tiger won. And I got paired with Tom Watson and with Tim Goosen in my very first major. I mean, I remember being on the first tee and I was thinking, please don't touch it. Just hit it, put it up in the air, and just don't touch it. I mean, don't make yourself a fool. So that was, I mean, there's definitely that very first one. There's definitely some extra pressure. And I would say the pressure is probably different when you are in contention. I've never been in contention in a major on a Sunday. Then it's when the pressure might be a little bit different. In my case, I would say on the first tee, yes, a little bit nervous on my very first one. Other than that, it's not much different. Not much different, I guess. As I said, until it's Sunday afternoon and you're playing for the tournament, then I'm sure it's a different animal.
Well, you've also got to play in three Sevi Cups representing continental Europe. How much do you enjoy the team aspect of that event, and what's some of your best memories of some tough matches you were playing in?
I love team golf. I mean, as an amateur in Europe, you grew up playing a lot of team golf. Not so much here. It's more about college, about your college team. Here in Europe, it's with your national team, and I've always enjoyed. I mean, we had a great team. Alvaro Quiroz was there, Cañizares, Pablo Martín Benavides. I mean, all those guys who are now playing in Europe on the European Tour, we were all playing together at the time on the national squad, and I've always enjoyed team golf. And Sevi Trophy, well, it's special because, I mean, it's, in my case, it's the only week of the year where you get to play some team golf, and it's always fun. As I said, you always play with friends, and you play different formats. You play foursomes, you play four balls. It's fun. It's different, and I think that makes it fun. The same way it's fun to play match play. I think 72 whole stroke play events every week after week makes it a little bit boring. I think we have to spice it up somehow and just make it a little different. I mean, some of the things they're doing in Europe, I think they're brilliant ideas. I don't know if that's going to be the future. I don't know what's going to happen going forward, but I think we need to spice this game a little bit, because week after week having the same thing is, I don't know, for spectators at home, I don't know, it's a little bit boring sometimes to me.
So you think even the players would be open to having some different events?
I think so. I think so. I think people, I mean, places like match play events, people like what we had last year in New Orleans, the couples event, things like that. I mean, all those, anything that's different, I think the viewers are willing to give it a go, and I think the players were definitely willing to try it, because I mean, I don't know. We're definitely losing golfers, especially in Europe. We're losing viewers as well. I think we need to change or make slight changes and try different things just to make this game more appealing for everybody, for young viewers, for old viewers, for everybody.
Well, let's talk about the ultimate team event, the Ryder Cup. I mean, you still have time in your career where you could be a Ryder Cup member. What would that mean to play in a Ryder Cup, and the importance to someone from Europe of that event, and what it would mean to you to eventually be on that team someday?
Well, I would love to. I mean, I grew up watching the Ryder Cup. I mean, the things Seve and Oli would do together at Ryder Cup. And I've been close a couple of times, so fortunately, and I never made it. And well, as you said, yeah, I mean, hopefully I have time. I still have time to do it. I'm going to start to play a little better if I want to make that team. But, yeah, I think that would be an amazing achievement. I mean, getting into that team and just being able to play against the U.S., it doesn't matter if it's on European soil or on American soil. I think there's something special about that week. Everybody that has played in it, they tell you it's an amazing week. The atmosphere is amazing. So, I mean, that's something I definitely have in mind. It's not one of my short-term goals. I think I have other things to take care of before that, but if one day I can make it into a Ryder Cup team, that would be something amazing. I don't know, and then I get to watch President's Cup every 2 years. I don't know, it just seems so different to me. I don't know you as an spectator or as an American how you feel about it, but I think there's something about that Ryder Cup that makes it a little different than President's Cup.
Not even close, just as being in the golf business and watching it. The atmosphere of a Ryder Cup versus a President's Cup from a fan standpoint, it's not even close. No,
that was my feeling. But I don't know. I mean, at some stage in Europe, I mean, I remember there was this time where we kept winning every Ryder Cup. And I always thought, well, you never know. I mean, these guys, nobody likes to lose on a regular basis. So I don't know. Maybe they start focusing on the President's Cup better than on the Ryder Cup. It's one of those things that you never know. But I think the future going ahead, I think the future looks pretty bright for the Americans. I hate to say it, but I think at least on paper, I think in my opinion, it looks the American squad looks a little stronger than the European.
But I mean, we actually have been talking about this. I think the European team, you know, like if people would have looked at it 6 months ago, they wouldn't have been as strong. But boy, they got some young players who are playing really well. I think the European
They do. The European team is going to be good, and I think they've got the home advantage this time, and they're playing at the Golf National in Paris, which is a course we play every year for the French Open. So they all know the course. I mean, the course is amazing. Just to let you know, it's probably one of the best venues ever for the Ryder Cup. I think the final holes and the first few holes, I mean, I think it's a perfect course for match play. I think it's going to be an amazing Ryder Cup. But I still think that, I mean, some of the young American players, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, I don't know, the list goes going on and on and on. I don't know. Hopefully I'm wrong. I mean, I would love to see Europe win. But I don't know. I have a feeling that the Ryder Cup is gonna be on American hands for quite a long time now.
It's going to be a great match. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, no question about that.
Hopefully it'll be tight and close and come down to the last few holes on Sunday.
For sure.
So my follow-up question to that is, if you could be on a winning European Ryder Cup team or have a major championship, you could have one or the other, what would you pick?
Wow. I think I'm going to be a little selfish and I'm going to go for the major. I mean, winning a major puts you in the history books. I mean, 7 European Tour wins is not going to put in any history books, but winning a major, pretty much everybody's going to remember you, even though if it's a one-time lucky thing. I think I'm going to have to go for the major. Can I choose the major?
I think I'd take the major. So, yeah, I would take the major, but I know, like, you know, yeah, the Europeans, the Ryder Cup is such a big event, but I agree, for your career, I would take the major for whatever it's worth.
Yeah.
The next questions I have, I ask every tour player that's on here, so they're kind of lighter questions, no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
Whatever kind of comes to your mind. So the best golf shot you personally ever hit under pressure in a golf tournament?
Wow. That's I'm gonna go for approach shot hit at the Belfry on 18 when just to force that playoff against Lee Westwood. I'm gonna go for that one. I'm sure there has to be a better one, but that's the one that comes to my mind right now.
The best golf shot you ever saw a competitor hit while you were playing with them, that it just blew you away of how good that golf shot was. Is there anything that stands out from watching a guy?
Yes. This is a simple one. I remember playing with Tiger at Bay Hill, 2013, the year he won. We were playing together on the third round. And when we get to six, to the par five, we both hit pretty good drivers. The pin was kind of the middle portion of the green, stuck on the left side beside the water. That was a gale blowing from the right. And we were, I think we were like 250 yards away, something like that. So, of course, I mean, the common mortals like me, the normal shot would be to hit it, aim into the right bunker and just let the wind take it. And even though you knew that you were not going to be able to stop it on the green, but you would take the water out of play. So that's what I did. I hit a perfect shot, just landed by the flag, but it rolled to the back of the green, run out. And then here goes Tiger, and I see him, he's aiming to the middle of the lake, and he's about to hit a big slice, which I reckon it was a 3-wood or 5-wood. And I said, well, I can't believe he's going to do this. I mean, there's a gale blowing right to left. I mean, it's a big slice that he needs to hit. And he pulled it out. He hit this thing just to the middle of the lake, cutting towards the flag, landed a few feet short of the flag and stopped on the green, something that I could have never thought about that shot. And of course, he did it. But that's the reason he won there 8 or 9 times, isn't it?
Well, that question I've asked a bunch of people, and I get Tiger a lot on, you know, certain shots that people have seen that they're just, you got to be kidding me. So,
he plays a different game. I've been forced to play with him, I think, with 5 or 6 times together, and he plays a different game. I mean, it's, I've played with the best. I've played with Mickelson, I've played with the best, with Ernie, with but Tiger, he played a different game, and I think he's going to be so good to have him back this year. And I would love to see him win a tour again. That would be something amazing. And if he can get another major, that would be the icing on the cake of an amazing career.
You may have touched on this earlier when we were talking about Sergio, so I don't know if this is the answer or not, but who had the most just raw, natural talent you ever saw that you played with from a competitor?
Sergio. No question, Sergio. I mean, you can see, and he's talented for sports in general. He's not only an amazing golf player, but he's a good tennis player. He's a good soccer player. You can see he's one of those guys that he's just talented for sports.
The next question I have, if you could take 3 PGA Tour players or Web.com players or European Tour players to play a fun money game of golf, and go out for drinks and dinner afterwards and just enjoy a day with 3 other professional golfers, who are you taking to make your foursome, and why are you taking those guys?
Well, if we're going to go for fun, I have to go for Alvaro Quiroz for sure. Cole Knox, the legend, and Martin Flores, who's a very good friend. So that would be my... And we could do a bit of a Ryder Cup pairings there, Europe against US, so that would be fun.
And those guys would be fun to have dinner and drinks with as well.
Oh, no question. No question. Those would be the guys. I mean, it would be an amazing day together.
And my last question I have for you, what is, in your opinion, the best 3 golf courses in the world, and what makes them so special?
Well, my number one, it's always been Loch Lomond in Scotland, near Glasgow. We used to play the Scottish Open there long ago. That's, I don't know, there's something special about that place by the lake. I think it's a Tom Weisskopf design. It's amazing. I mean, when the weather is nice, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. My second favorite probably has to be TPC Sawgrass. I love that course. I think it really tests every part of your game. And there's something unique about those finishing holes as well. 16, 17, 18, I think anything can happen. And when you're playing a tournament there, you can be three shots behind or three shots ahead, and anything can happen on those finishing holes. And my last one, it has to be between St. Andrews and Pebble Beach. Just for the history. I mean, there's something, St. Andrews as a course, I wouldn't say it's, in the design-wise, maybe it's not the greatest, but there's something about that place that makes it very unique. Same as Pebble. I mean, Pebble, the scenery, I don't know, there's so many. Jason, we're so blessed to be, I mean, to travel the world and get to play all these courses. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast, Gonzo. Keep up the great play. We'll be watching, and thank you for your time today, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and hopefully first of many.